live from Azunia Studios. Holtis is ready. Dybul's ready.
Yeah.
Are you ready? Are you ready? Let's get it on, folks. This is Edge.
I'm gonna tell you a story about little man. He lived his life on the edge in the garbage can. And then he met that woman. She's gonna tear him apart. He needs a brand new life. Needs a brand new start. Do it.
Guys.
Folks, welcome to Edge. Holtis and Dybul here live up on top of the Azunia Mountain. Some sort of Disneyland party going on next door right now. Don't know exactly what it is. Pumpkins on fire. Not too bad, but, you know.
I thought you were wearing your Halloween mask right now. You're going trick-or-treating next door.
No. I rechanged the spelling of my name back to J-I-M for the week, so.
Not Fit Jim, but Old School Jim.
Oh, yeah.
Right on, man.
Step into a Slim Jim.
You're still on the Hulkamania wrestling plan. We're going into real wrestling, real MMA going on this week. We got a great show, man. How you been?
You know what? I had a great week. Awesome weekend. The Chargers didn't lose, didn't play,
the
but
Cowboys,
didn't lose.
The Cowboys didn't lose. They won. Yeah, it was a good week in ball sports. We got by the way, if you're listening to us right now, you obviously don't care anything about baseball, or you'd be listening to it in your car on the way home, or you're probably watching the World Series going on right meow. Right meow, there's a World Series. I'm not going to
really?
Tell you.
You right meowed?
Right, I'm not going to tell you who
that is
winning.
That is such a chickism.
Right
are
now?
Are you kidding me? You can't meow.
What, are you in charge of meows?
No.
Well, back off. I got at least three or four left in me on the show.
Wow.
Yeah, man, had a good week, though. How'd your week go?
You know, it's really good. You know, I did some golf on Tuesday.
I heard about
it. Sorry, Monday. Mid to low 90s for me. It was a great round.
Mid to low. You don't remember what you
said? Well, no, here's the problem. Great round for me, at least, but left the card in the cart and called and tried to get him to take a picture of it, give me the score or whatever, and everyone was gone by that time. But only had one snowman. Everything else, like one over, a couple pars. Here and there, but it was a good day, and it was at Woods Valley, which is a beautiful golf course. And by the way, folks, if you're looking for the deals for Monday golf, 2-for-1, so for 43, but whatever it was, turned out to be $21 a piece on this beautiful course. Just amazing. It was a great deal. So tomorrow, the buddy that we played with, it's his birthday. He requested that we play golf with him on his birthday. So
you're going back out.
We're doing it for him, Danny.
What a nice guy you are. Apparently my phone wasn't ringing. Must have lost a number or something.
On the emails the other day, it clearly said the last word of the email was golf with a question mark, and that question you did not answer.
I thought you were just asking me, do I know what golf is? But apparently if you left your scorecard out in the cart, you brought one of these bottles of delicious Azunia tequila out there with you and possibly left...
That's why we bring the big tour bag. It lives with us.
All sense of sanity out on the course. But, yeah, man, well, I had a great week, too. Thanks for asking.
can you give me time to ask, for goodness?
Okay, let's start over. Go ahead.
How was your week, man?
Dude, it was horrible. Why are you even asking me?
I don't know. You look horrible, too.
Jesus.
I'm kidding.
Rough one. No, I had a great week. It was super fun. Great weekend. Just kind of hung around and kept it mellow. Kind of actually got a little fired up, tore it up on Friday night, or sorry, Saturday night, so I spent most of Sunday recuperating and
well, it was kind of rainy in my neck of the woods, at least, so it was kind of like chill out,
weird
couch
weekend,
day.
Huh?
Yeah.
Like, everybody was just kind of sat around. Not a whole lot going on. People weren't overly thrilled, but there was a lot of sports on, a lot of football on. A lot of people getting their football on this
Check
weekend.
This out. I was so excited to watch the Kansas NASCAR race. Start watching this game. Thought it was horrible. Turns out, by the way, every single game, even the bad teams, came down to the last play, like a field goal or overtime or one team scores. You think they won, and then the other Manning throws a touchdown, whatever. So then I'm sitting there, and I'm screwing around on Facebook, doing a little bit of work on our website and stuff, and I see a post on Facebook saying, you know, Matt Kenseth wins the race. I'm like, my whole day was based around watching the race, and I forgot to turn the freaking thing on.
I hear you on that. Oh, what's worse than that is when you record, you're watching one show and you're recording another one, and then they give you one update in the first sport saying how the second sport finished. You're all, MF-er, I just spent 2 hours avoiding all contact, turned the cell phone off.
You can't do anything.
So I could avoid that. They got to give you spoiler alerts now.
You got to turn your Facebook and your computer off towards the end of American Idol season, let me just tell you, pal.
Don't worry about it. I don't care that much about American Idol. I am my own American Idol. But, hey, going back to golf, I got to tell you about this story I read online. Happened just about in my neck of the woods in the SJC San Juan Capistrano on the golf course. Marshall's out cruising the golf course, right? Looks at something in the sand trap. It's a shark. There's a shark. And he thought it was dead. The thing is still wiggling and moving. Couldn't figure it out. Where did the shark come from? He's in the middle of nowhere on the golf course. And so he literally picked the shark up from the tail, threw it in a bucket. They did some impromptu tap water and salt, mixed it in there. And then one of the guys, one of the cart guys, drove it and dropped it back in the ocean. They have no idea where the shark from. Said it fell from the sky. And it was a good-sized shark. They think some type of predatory bird might have grabbed it and flown it inland. And
a pterodactyl?
The golf course is 2 or 3 miles inland. I don't know. It's up on the Yahoo page, but look for shark in San Juan Hills Golf Course. I thought that was
I've heard
amazing.
Of sand sharks before, but wow.
I'm telling you, those are some tough...
The inland sand sharks I've never met.
Those are some tough holes in golf when you hit it into a sand trap and you get bit by a shark, so that's a pretty rough one.
My attention deficit disorder has hard enough time concentrating on the small white ball and the noises and what this guy's doing and talking about and the music coming out here. The last thing I need is sharks. On the course.
Oh, sharks on the golf course. And it's funny, that's usually my line. Hey, I'm the shark on the golf course. I'll tell you, you know, what's going on. But to have an actual live shark, it was pretty heavy. Also in sports, stuff that's going on, not just golf, but cycling, it's been official that Lance Armstrong's been stripped from all his titles, and everybody's turning on him. I think he's great still. I think just about every sport they're cheating in, and I heard the best one on the Stephen Carell show last night. They're like, okay, yeah, Lance Armstrong wins, you know, his 7 titles are taken away from him.
Yeah.
What are they going to do? Give it to the runner-up? Because, sure, the guy who finished the 2nd behind him, he wasn't doping. But, you know, Lance, who's had powdered monkey balls injected straight into his heart, he's the only way he can get there.
If he was probably the 15 guys below him,
oh, we're all up
we're
on
doing
it
too.
Sure.
So that's just stupid. And I forget the talk show was the other day. I don't know if it was Sharon Osbourne, who I'm not a particular fan of, but
you're watching.
But said I what I think of Lance Armstrong, and I'm like, oh, this ought to be good. I look at him as a guy that's raised $30 million for cancer. That's how I look at Lance Armstrong, and I'm like, wow, that's pretty cool. She never knew the guy. Anything else when she had her cancer or whatever, he called her out of the blue, not knowing her, and then continued to check on her throughout her therapy and never even knew the guy, just called in and did that on top of raising all those tens of millions of dollars for people.
Yeah, and you know what? So, I think most people who look at him as the cancer spokesperson and basically, you know, he's at the top of the list as far as athletes, personalities who have fought cancer and survived for it. You know, personally being affected, my mother dying of cancer just a couple of years ago, I see, you know, him as that more than a cyclist. You know, bottom line is I hate cyclists, and I could run them off the road in a row if it all lined up for me, which they do a lot of the times in Laguna and make it quite easy. But so I don't even consider him a cyclist. I try to block that part out. And just as a cancer activist, he is an amazing guy. But they said, oh, he's losing $200 million in endorsements. How is he going to deal with that? I'm pretty sure he's got enough locked away in the bank to make it through the rest of his days. So, that's pretty good.
Bummer for him, and I don't agree with it. Whatever, and I don't agree with everyone jumping off the ship for a guy that does so much good either. So,
hey,
my take.
I got a really funny one to bring up here. I read this on the Newswire. There's a school in Piedmont, California, Piedmont High, who they're pretty into sports too. You want to know how into sports they were?
How into sports were they?
So they were so into sports that they created their own fantasy league. Which isn't, you know, that big of a deal, except for the boys really weren't focused on football or baseball. They created a fantasy slut league where they actually created a hierarchical system where if you knock down certain chicks that they had on the scoreboard, you get X amount of points.
You don't mean pushed over.
No, I don't mean pushed over, but if you cross that bridge when you came to it, let's just say.
This is a high school or a college, right?
High school kids. And so the principal got wind of this and it created this whole controversy. I think certain kids are getting expelled. And, you know, I say, you know, most of these kids are thinking of it anyway. Bravo to them that they were coordinated enough to put their efforts together in some type of organization. I'm sure that website got taken down pretty quick.
Is that guy coming to see me? It says Gym Bound.
Gym Bound, he's over. You're still in the gym, GYM.
No, I changed the
spelling. So what are your thoughts on the Fantasy Slut Leagues?
You know, I didn't know about it until just now. It's definitely interesting. I'm glad it's not like a grade school or something.
No, don't even bring that up. My beloved 7-year-old daughter, we draw the line at 12 years old on anything that talks like
that. Hey, last thing here before we talk to the lovely Brianna and get to Breeze 3 here. Did you watch the Monster Energy Cup, some badass racing?
Yeah, Monster Energy Cup was on fire. It was so cool.
The minis, the amateurs, the big bikes, all awesome races.
How are the kids clearing the finish line jump on those little 110cc?
They're not even 110s, they're like 85s.
Oh, my God, they're flying over everything. It was amazing. It was so cool to see a company like Monster, you know, put in the dough to create something completely unique. All the big names were in it. Unfortunately,
our boy Mike Alessi, that was just on the show, had the Edge Mojo charging right at the front for like a long time. I think still finished in the top one or two, right?
Got whole shots on it. Had a great run. Definitely got the Edge Mojo. You can check out his interview with us on our podcast through iTunes or as well on our website, www.edge3.tv. And great event, though. So cool to see Ricky Carmichael lay out a just totally unique track, twin different starting points coming together, went through, you know, just some sands and different terrain variation, came in. You know, it sucked to see
Filippo go out.
Filippo, you know,
then he just hangs it up. But I understood that. What I was stoked about, how about Barcia coming in from the lights, the first events racing on 450, like smoke in the competition, an instant competitor, wins not the million, but the overall win and gets 100 grand. Nice. Watch out for him in Anaheim.
It's going to be a year for Supercross, and that's going to do it. But enough about me, enough about you.
Yeah, let's get to Brianna right now. It's time for Breeze 3. She looks like she's about to fall asleep over here. I don't know exactly what's going on. You look a little tired. Welcome home.
What's up, droopy eyes?
So I look like crap. Thanks, guys.
No, you always look great.
You did win the shoe contest again today, though.
Yay,
you're back on top there because you lost last week.
Well, because Crystal's not here.
Yeah.
So what's going on in your world?
I'm good. I just had a little girl's vacation. Just got back. It was supposed to be mellow.
Las Vegas. I talked to you yesterday. We're just chilling out poolside, nothing gnarly. And today it's like things changed. Things changed.
Well, it does, and you know it does, Jim. You know it does.
Yeah,
I've
heard.
Me.
I've heard.
Uh-oh.
But no, I heard you had an awesome time out there.
It was.
Hanging with a bunch of buds and friends out there doing the ritzy thing over where at the Cosmo and a couple other places and had an awesome time.
It
so
awesome.
That's good. I need me some Vegas, I know. Thanks for the invite, but whatever, it's cool.
Well, you know.
I know.
You know. All right, what's Breeze 3? What's happened in the world of TMZ and fantastic
other world? Now, were you one of the three?
Yeah, but I took it out.
You didn't get in on TMZ
no,
in last night, did you?
No way. I stayed classy.
Good.
I stayed classy. I do.
What happened?
Okay, so Mark Sanchez and Eva Longoria officially broke up, but they broke up with no drama. And I'm shouting this out because Crystal loves him, and I'm telling her to be his rebound.
Sorry, my bad.
Well, I thought we had some new official Edge groupies, and they're too hungover to even be here, so step up, guys.
Oh, gosh. Okay, this one's juicier. There's a lawsuit filed by a Chris Brown imposter.
Who the hell would want to impersonate Chris Brown?
But he's against Rihanna. So there's this official lawsuit in a court filed by an imposter. Okay, I don't get it. But anyways.
What is it?
So one of these untrue allegations is he's claiming that she gave him herpes and that his life is in danger because these herpes are lethal because they're from Barbados.
Simplex 10.
Wait, herpes simplex conch shell? What is that going on?
Congo edition. Yeah, I don't know what the hell that is.
But there are more allegations, but I'm just confused.
Like
so,
he has a lawyer who's backing him up on this official paperwork with...
Well, they just found out it's an imposter, obviously, because the lawsuit...
Like I said, if you're trying to impersonate Chris Brown, you belong in jail anyways.
I just don't understand, so I can pretend I'm you, and I can go to a court and sue you... for making fun of. I don't get it. Like, yeah. You can do that? I don't.
That's
I don't
a little
understand.
Bizarre.
I think you
sure.
can sue anyone for anything.
But you
the
can
judge just might
to someone,
toss
though?
It and you out on your ass. I don't know.
Jeez, that's weird.
I don't know. Anyways, so since it's election time, I thought this is kind of relevant. So Donald Trump just made an announcement to Obama via YouTube that he will give him $5 million, not him, but he will give it any charity $5 million if he, what's it called? If he
drops out and goes away?
I'm sorry, I'm a little hungover.
Is that right?
No, no, let me help you out. I'll throw you a lifeline here.
If he releases his college transcripts.
College transcripts and his passport application. I read that. I read that one while I was bumping around too. Basically,
$5 million.
Donald said, I don't know, but we try not to get too involved with politics because we don't want to turn into every other show that's on KCAA to AM 1050 here with people barking.
Because that's what we're not.
This way and that, but you know, it's hard not to see it with every you know. Every commercial coming on the air, pro-Romney this, anti-Obama that, this Prop 37 and a half, special interest this, yes here, no there. You know, it's just it takes your energy away. But Donald Trump basically, you know, he came on hard in the 2008 election against, and for years after, about Obama's personal passport or his birth certificate, where is it, what's going on. And then it was produced, and then he said he's got, you know, this personal information on him. We got to sit and wait, you know, and it never came to light. Well, I guess he's trying to make some of that, his research come to light, which he's bringing now, and he basically is saying he's going to give him a $5 million donation mm-hmm. to the charity of Obama's choice if he could provide these documents or something like that. Bottom line is, my personal feeling is he's trying to create some type of controversy. I would have loved to see Donald Trump run for president because that would have been the funniest thing ever to have Donald, you know, the Pizza Hut commercial guy, you know, go be our president. And I would have loved to see that in action. But so we'll see where it comes out of this. You never know. It is a good juicy bit of Hollywood gossip. And that's the category I put that in now is I put the Donald, not in a business, not in a politician, but he's in a juicy Hollywood gossip type category. So we're going to see where this comes. And hopefully, you know, it something comes to light, which is entertaining because it's the entertainment industry. So I'm psyched to hear it. Thank you, Bree, on your Breeze 3. Thank
you're
you for
welcome.
Making
you're
it
welcome.
Here today.
Oh, I had to. We have an awesome
thanks for
awesome
flying
guest.
Right in and ending your trip soon. We appreciate it.
I'm not going to lie. I took a nap right before. Hence the pigtails.
I saw her in the car like this when I drove up, and I'm like, do I wake her?
She's
I don't
dead.
Know.
She's dead.
I was like,
There's like a tiger in the back seat. I'm like, I'd better just leave him. I don't know. All right,
well, oh, gosh.
Brianna, thank you for coming
you're welcome.
On.
You're
we'll
welcome.
See you next week.
Breeze 3.
If you guys want to check out anything about Breeze 3, make sure to log on to our Facebook page, facebook.com/Edge3TV. You can always follow us on Twitter, at Edge3.TV. And we got a podcast going now, so you can backlog any of these fantastic shows that
you can join iTunes, automatically download, and be a part of it. But, hey, we're going to take our first break right now. When we come back, our featured guest, Big John McCarthy, is in-house here live at Azunia Studios, Holtis Dival. We'll be right back with a lot more Edge.
We're seeing things in a different way, and God knows it ain't his. It sure ain't no surprise. We're living on the edge.
At General Tire, we make tires that can take on the elements and survive. Less than 1% of the earth is paved. Go attack the rest. General Tire. Anywhere is possible. Be sure to visit your local General Tire dealer for a complete line of General Tires.
Hey, this is Rick Dale with Rick's Restorations, and I'm on the edge.
You're on, guys.
There's something wrong with the world today. I don't know what it is.
All right, folks, welcome back to Edge. Jim Holtis, Ryan Dival, live from the Azunia Tequila Studios. And now we have our featured guest in here with us, tonight's referee for the thousands in attendance and the millions all over the world, Big John McCarthy. Sean, how do you like that intro?
Dude, that was pretty damn good. I'm impressed.
It was kind of a mix between Michael and Bruce.
Yeah, you got the whole thing going there.
Somewhere in the middle.
Are you the lost buffer there, Jim? You are, huh?
Well, listen to the applause, man. But boy, there's the millions in attendance right there. Hey, thanks so much for coming in-house and chatting with you. It was great meeting you a few weeks back at the Lancaster Torque Race, coming out, being the Grand Marshal. What did you think of off-road racing?
Oh, my God, those guys were awesome. I mean, one of the things I tell people all the time is, you know, you get all these people that talk about fighting and stuff, and it's like, oh, I used to do this, I used to do that, and it's like, yeah, that's great. And they have no idea how good a real fighter is, how hard a real fighter hits, how good they are at what they do. And when you go and you watch those guys at the Torque Racing Series, you have no freaking concept about how fast those guys are going and how on the edge they are the whole time. Those dudes are balls to the wall. It is awesome to watch. It's a great spectator sport. I loved every minute of it.
Matter of fact, you got to see Ricky Johnson win a championship right in front of you.
I got Ricky Johnson's hood.
Whoa. Car, man. The championship hood.
That is up in my office. It's signed. Man, I love that thing. I had a blast.
Well, that's awesome. And, again, thanks for coming down. I know you quite a trek for you down here. Let's go way back and start earlier in your career. You didn't start off as a referee. You, well, kind of ran in the family. It started off, your dad was a policeman for many years, I believe.
My dad was a police officer in Los Angeles for about 25 years, yeah.
And you were 23, 24 years.
I was 23 years. I couldn't handle the last two that he did, so I got out.
Yeah. Now, was it...
Wait, that's just before pension level, isn't it? Or did you get pension on that?
You know what? I am so smart, you know, that I changed my pension. It's a long story, but there was a change of the pensions with LAPD, and at the time I was on a pension that at 20 years you could leave, and you got, you know, a certain percentage, and the most I could get was, I think, 70%. And they came up with this new one where you could actually get up to 90%, and MMA was kind of having problems, and I waited the entire year to December 31st before I signed the paper and sent in to change it over. And so that little change only cost me probably about $200,000. Because I didn't get a pension. In fact, I just turned 50 like a week and a half ago. And so now,
wow,
I get a pension.
50. First of all, I'm tripping on 50. You got all your hair, which I'm jealous about being bald.
Quite a head of hair, that too.
I see one or two grays in there, which
he's got like Howie Long 50, hair. It gets better with age.
I think he's scared age away. I think he's such a badass. He's scared aging completely away.
Dude, do you see all the wrinkles on my face? I look like I look like the ass end of a Sharpay pencil.
You know,
okay.
My eyes don't work that good. Apparently, your eyes still work that good. That's a problem again, right there. But so tell us about what was it like being a cop, man. I mean,
you were in some gnarly stuff, including the LA riots.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
Tell me good cop stories during the LA riots.
Good cop stories. You know what? There's certain things that you just don't talk about anymore because there's these things called, you know,
lawsuits.
Some things have no little things that they can forgive you for at times. Now, you know what?
You still got to keep to the code, right?
I had a great time as on the LAPD. I got to do things and meet, you know, certain people. I always tell people there's good and bad in everything, and I love the fact that, you know, you get all these people that talk about, oh, policemen, and they have this, you know, they protect each other, and that's such bull crap. Police officers roll on each more than any profession I've ever seen in my life.
Really?
But you do meet some, for the most part, most of the guys are there to actually try to do something good and to be good at what they do and to help people. And it's tough to be a police officer and help people because most of the time, you know, you're coming in contact with them when they've either had something tragically bad happen to them or they just did something bad and now you're taking that freedom away and putting them in a place they don't want to be. So usually when, you know, you're in contact with a police officer, it's not a good day.
You understand, though, that it's not personal. This guy's going through the gnarliest stuff. Every single person you meet that they've ever gone through, probably. And
absolutely. You know, I always looked at it. It really helped me with what I do now. And in being a police officer, I learned very quickly there's a thing called letter of the law and there's a thing called spirit of the law. And there was many times there was people, they broke the law, and you know what? I would let them go. Because spirit of the law tells me I understand why that happened.
Spirit of the law. Let me write that one down, because I'm going to pull that one out.
You
my
do that.
Next time, because I've never seen that. Well, no, you know what? We were talking about this not that long ago. That seemed to happen a lot back you know, 10, 15 years ago, there was a little bit more spirit of the law and a little bit more of the letter of the law is where guys are, I don't know if it's budget cuts, they're really trying to, you know, get every dollar they can out of every fine, out of every arrest or what, but it seems like cops are a lot stiffer these days.
You know, I think what a lot of it is it's what people have done and decided to do. I hate to say it, it's lawyers. Mm-hmm. You get lawyers that, you know what, a police officer goes and does something with somebody. I mean, I actually had a partner at one time. When I was young on the job, I was a probationer at the time because the first year you're on probation.
Yeah, yeah.
And he actually gave a person a divorce. You know, and I'll never forget it. He took the badge off of his chest. He put it in his hand. He had the woman and the man who were screaming and yelling at each other, hating each other. He put their hands on top of that badge and actually said, you know, by the powers vested in me of the city of Los Angeles, state of California, I'm hereby announcing you are divorced. And those were the two happiest people I ever saw. You know?
Classic.
So, you know, those things, you know, if someone did that now, then some lawyer would hear about it and he'd go after the police officer and, yeah, there would be trouble. But, you know,
called it at that, and hey, we're divorced, and that's it.
They were happy, and you know, a week later, they were together, and this, you know, we're getting remarried, and I swear to you on that, you know, and it's like
that's a good idea.
Go ahead.
Yeah.
You know, but it's, you know, you got to do things smart, and any more lawyers and lawsuits and things, I think, have taken away some of the ability for people just to do things in a way that's going to actually be beneficial in solving the problem, but not being officially what you can do.
So tell me, I mean, early years of law enforcement, obviously you've been with this little thing called the UFC and mixed martial arts back basically before there was a mixed martial arts, before it was, well, it was mixed martial arts, but nobody really coined that term yet.
Like
it was on the map.
Back then it was NHB, no holds barred.
No holds barred. Yeah. You know, 500-pound guys going against, you know, 120-pound jiu-jitsu going against this. I mean, since the beginning, and how did you stumble into this, and, you know, how did you get involved, really? Before even UFC, did they go together? How'd that come apart?
You know what? I was always able to... I like to do different things in my life. And I started, you know, boxing at a certain age and wrestling and doing things. And when I came on to LAPD, I actually started teaching officers little things. And I had a friend who we were working out. He was a judo guy, and we were working out. And I was wrestling. And, you know, if I put a gi on, he could throw me.
Uh-huh.
He could toss me on my head, and I wasn't too appreciative of that. But if I didn't put a gi on, he couldn't do much with me. He would try for his locks, and I would be able to get out, and I would control him, and I'd, you know, do my thing. And he came up with this thing of saying, hey, there's this group of brothers that are from South America. He goes, I can't remember their name, but they do ground fighting, and you would love them. And I ended up being placed on, I think, there was the Martial Arts Review Board for the Los Angeles Police Department because there was the Rodney King incident that happened.
Mm-hmm.
And they were trying to figure out a way to... How can we teach police officers to better handle that situation?
Than with batons.
Than with a baton, because look, you know,
submission, right?
You're going to hit someone with a baton, it doesn't look good.
Yeah, so right. Doesn't show good on camera.
I ended up meeting up with a man named Horian Gracie, and it was a funny situation. How it happened was, you know, they had all these different martial arts instructors from all over. I mean, they had Benny Urquidez from kickboxing. They had Gene LaBelle. They had, you know, the Farbors brothers. They had all these grandmasters from everything. And Horian Gracie was one of them. And they had this guy, and I don't want to say his name, but he was from Hwarang Do at the time. And he was taking this kid and, you know, throwing him around. It was one of his students. And he was saying officers could do this and that. And I was sitting there, I'm watching him, like, you know, that's great, but that kid's letting you do that. And eventually, you know, he looked and he says, you know, you don't seem, you know, too impressed with what I'm doing. And I said, well, no disrespect to you. I said, he's letting you do that. What happens when someone doesn't let you do that and is actually fighting you back? He says, well, do you want to come try? I said, well, I'll come up there and try. I said, but I'm not going to just let you do that to me. And he said, well, okay, come on up. And so, you know.
Now, hold on. Break down the size right now.
He's smaller than me, no doubt about it.
Okay.
He's probably, you know, only tall-wise, 5'10", probably 185 pounds.
And you are?
At the time, I'm 6'4" and about 285, 90. Probably 9 years old.
Wow. Almost two of them. Okay, got it.
And so, you know, but he says, you know, okay. He says, you know. And he goes to grab me, and I pick him up, and I double leg him, and I put him on the ground, and I get on his chest, and I do what is a mount in Brazilian jiu-jitsu, and I start slapping him. And he's trying to get out, and he rolls, and I take him, and I grab him, and I choke him. And, you know, he taps, and I have a sergeant there who is pissed at me for doing what I just did.
Why?
And I made it someone because I'm not supposed to do that.
Yeah.
And so I start getting chastised in the corner by the sergeant about, you know, you can't do that. And I said, hey, I apologize. I'm proving that doesn't work.
Right.
So I sit back down. Horian Gracie sits down next to me, and he says, what's your name? And he starts talking to me. He says, he says, I like what you did, and why don't you come out to my, you know, I have a new school that we're opening up, and it's in Carson and stuff. And
mm-hmm. Which is a hotbed for early mixed martial arts and jiu-jitsu, the whole kind of Torrance, Carson.
So at the time, I started going down to Torrance. I became a student of Horian Gracie's, and a little bit after that, they started coming up with this concept that they were going to do this thing called War of the Worlds, and that's how it all started.
So you're still a police officer at this time?
Yes.
How does it start parlaying into a career for you? Does it do that while you're a police officer still?
Well, yeah, absolutely. I mean, I was a police officer for 12 to 13 years while doing the UFC.
Well, real quick, I mean, you obviously got into, you know, the refereeing of the matches, but at that point when he saw you lift people on their heads and tie them up in pretzels, did they ever ask you, like, do you want to engage as a professional in this?
You know what? No, really, no, that never came into effect.
Why?
What really happened was I started working out with Horian at that time.
So he had a gun. That's why he needed to.
He had multiple brothers there. And I actually started helping Horian with his grapple program that he was going to come up with, and that was for police officers and military, and what they can do. And I started training with Hoyce and Hickson, and then sometimes Hoyler would be down there, but, you know, going to class. And then when the UFC, the first one was going to come up, they were having all these big guys that were going to be in it. And Hoyce said, and he says, hey, I need big guys as sparring partners. He said, would you help me be a sparring partner? So absolutely. And so I started, you know, going with Hoyce, and that's how I really got involved with the UFC, because I went to Colorado with Hoyce as one of his sparring partners to just help him continue to train at altitude, since it was way up, you know, mile high. And after that show, I went to, they actually had a sheet in Black Belt Magazine, you know, do you think you're tough? And you could fill out the sheet in Black Belt Magazine. But WOW Promotions was the arm of Horian and Art Davey for the UFC. Semaphore Entertainment Group was the second arm, and they had this sheet, and so I filled out the sheet and I put it on, you know, the desk, and I wanted to be a fighter. And Horian called me in after the first one, and he goes, hey John, he says, you know, what's this, you know, he says, what are you doing, you want to fight us? And I go, well, absolutely not. And I said, you know, I'd like to fight in it. And he says, but Hoyce is in it. And I didn't even think about it. Hoyce is a star now, kind of, you know. And it's like, I'm not saying that I want to fight Hoyce. That wasn't it. It was, well, if ever Hoyce was not going to do it, then I would like to represent and do this thing. So, okay, he says, that's great. But really, I want you to be a referee for me. And that's when he started asking me to referee the show. He wasn't happy with what happened. In the very first fight that occurred was a fight between Gerard Gordeau and Taylor Tooley. Taylor Tooley was a big sumo wrestler, and Gerard Gordeau was actually a kickboxer from Holland. They said he was Savant. And
blonde guy and big black
Hawaiian kid.
I mean, sumo.
Yep.
Right.
And, you know,
one of the most famous visually things from the early days.
Oh, yeah. Because, you know, Taylor Tooley goes rushing across trying to kind of grab a hold of Gerard, and Gerard does a nice little step out, and he circles, and Taylor hits the ground. Well, in sumo, when you hit the ground, you know, your match is over, and you can actually even go back and watch. He kind of relaxes. He kind of like, oh, and he kind of sits himself up, and when he sits himself up, Gerard goes to kick him in the face, and he hits him square. Two teeth go into Gerard's foot.
Oh.
One tooth goes flying out of the octagon.
Oh.
And then he comes down and hits him with the right hand, breaks his hand on him when he hits him with the right hand. But Taylor is kind of, you know, he gets cut by it. He's done. He's not fighting. He's just becoming a punching bag. And there's a man in there as the referee, was brought in from Brazil. João Barreto was the referee of it, and he stops the match. But he wasn't allowed to stop the match. It was supposed to be that, in the very first UFC, the rounds were actually, there was unlimited five-minute rounds, and the rules of it were that there was no biting, no eye gouging, and no groin strikes. But the referee didn't have the power to stop the match. The only way the match could stop was the corner throws in the towel, or the fighter tapped out.
Yeah, or something. Yeah.
Then the referee could stop it. Well, Taylor didn't tap out. His corner didn't throw in the towel. So you can go back and watch it, and you'll see this big old argument between Jorge and Gracie and the referee, Joao Barreto, about stopping the fight. And Joao Barreto is basically saying, you know, this guy can't fight. And, you know,
which is a natural instinct when a guy can't defend himself and he looks like he's on his way to Hellville. Yeah.
The first thing I learned at UFC 2 when I started refereeing it was Joao Barreto had compassion for another human being that couldn't get himself out of a problem. Mm-hmm. That was a nice thing. And you know what?
He had already lost the fight.
Yes, exactly. And so, you know, I replaced Joao Barreto because I was to be the guy that was going to let them get beat to death. And, you know, I quickly learned that, you know what? Fighters sometimes had unrealistic expectations of what they could do. Their corners absolutely had unrealistic expectations of what they could do. The fighter had already gone in there telling the corner, don't you ever throw in the towel. The person that was with the towel, even if the fighter was unconscious, didn't have a clue that their person was unconscious, then should throw it. So I was stuck in a position where people were going to get hurt. So after the very first, you know, show that I did, I went to Horry and said, I will never do that again. And he goes, why? It was great. You know, I said, Horian, I have seen people killed
and thereby,
by getting beat to death.
Yeah, your experience with law enforcement led you to that, but you basically helped to basically change the direction and rewrite the rules for
the sport,
for the entire sport and how
it
goes.
It kind of went. What ended up happening is, you know, I tried to reason with Horian until I told him. I said, look. If somebody is hurt, if they're unconscious, if they're knocked out, if they're hurt and they cannot, and that was at the time that I came up with intelligently defend yourself. If they can't intelligently defend themselves, I need to be able to stop the fight or else your show is going to get shut down.
Yeah, yeah.
Someone's going to get the broader look to
think about that.
And so he looked at it and eventually he came back to me and said, you know what? Okay. If they can't intelligently defend yourself, you can stop the fight then. And that was the first thing that I was able to come up with that started me being able to stop the fight if someone got hurt. And then all the rules that, you know, are still in place today.
I was just going to say, does that rule still read in those words today?
You will hear more referees talking about if you cannot intelligently defend yourself, we're going to stop the fight.
So that's it.
Still there. You know, everything is there. You can look and go back to fish hooking. That was Tank Abbott against Oleg Taktarov. I'm sitting there. My dad got into a fight at Dodger Stadium with a guy that was cutting people with a box cutter. And he ends up taking he picks the guy and slams him up into the seats and then takes and puts his fingers inside this guy's and splits him from his lower lip up to his eye.
And, you know, just everybody at home, you should have seen the visual with his hands that he did that because I almost got sick. That was so, by the way, real quick, sorry, I just want to let everybody listen. You're listening to Edge Radio with Jim Holthus, Ryan Dival. We got big John McCarthy who's talking story with us now, and you're not going to want to turn the dial because it's pretty damn amazing. So please continue about your dad ripping a guy's face off.
So I asked my dad, well, what is that, right? And he goes, I was a little kid, and he says, that's fish hooking, don't do it. And so then I see Tank Abbott doing it during the fight. I go, hey, that's fish hooking, you can't do that. Right, because the only way to defend against it is biting. So we said, all right, I go to the owner at the time and say, hey, look, you can't have this. He said, okay, let's make the rule. So no fish hooking. No fish hooking is still part of the rules. You go and, you know, the next fight was Joel Sutton was fighting a guy named Geza Kalman, and there's headbutting was allowed at the time. And he headbutts a Geza, and he puts a cut about, you know, a half inch long up on top of his forehead and then takes his fingers and sticks his fingers in each side of it and pulls it, rips it all the way down from the top of his head down to his eye. You know, and you go, that's just nasty.
Maybe we shouldn't do that. Yeah, this is how all the rules came into play.
Honestly, that's how rules come.
Were nut shots ever legal?
Yes.
They were, to start.
Yeah, no, at UFC 1, they were not, but because some of the fighters complained that, you know what, well, if
you know, I
want
to be able to kick someone in the nuts.
If I was allowed to do what I would have done in real life in the street, you know, I would have given them a knee to the groin, and so they said, okay, no problem. Here's your rules. No eye gouging, no biting. Groin strikes are allowed. Go ahead.
So, because that's how I remember when I first started watching, there was nut shots. Everyone wore a gi, and it's funny you talk about the gi versus not. I remember Hoist Gracie tying everyone up and choking them out in their own gi.
That's what they're for.
If someone was dumb enough to go in with a gi against Hoist, he's going to use it as a tool.
Yeah.
So we should probably let's do a commercial because I want to just have blazing wide open questions, you know, for our final segment when we come back. We're already at, you know.
And then we got to get into your new interactive app, which I just
absolutely
think is badass. But we want to find out a little bit more as well, too. So let's go pay those bills. We'll come back. A lot more with Big John McCarthy. Jim and Ryan, we'll be right back. Don't go anywhere. Wear that ear protection because you're going to need it.
It ain't his. It sure ain't no surprise. Yeah. We're living on the edge.
I'm a little diver. I'm six. And I'm going to list some facts on why you should buy your next car or truck for Stadium Nissan. Fact. Stadium Nissan is conveniently located next to Anaheim Stadium. Fact. Spread of the entire staff will make your whole experience easy and hassle-free. Stadium Nissan will give you free car washes for life with any new car purchase. Fact. A tiger's my favorite animal. Fact. Stadium Nissan has an amazing inventory of new and pre-owned cars and trucks. Fact. My mommy really turns heads and her tricked-out Maxima. Fact. My daddy thinks he's tough and his lift is Titan. Fact. Stadium Nissan has a super easy website to go through with all the info that you could possibly ask for. So these are the facts. If you still have any questions, hit them up on the website for live chat. StadiumNissanOC.com. I said StadiumNissanOC.com. Simply better.
At General Tire, we make tires that can take on the elements and survive. Less than 1% of the earth is paved. Go attack the rest. General Tire. Anywhere is possible. Be sure to visit your local General Tire dealer for a complete line of General Tires.
Hey guys, Travis Pastrana here from Nitro Circus, and I'm always on the edge.
There's something wrong with the world today. I don't know what it is.
Did you just kiss me? Folks, welcome back to Edge. Dive a little bit into my space here. I'm not sure. Hey, speaking of General Tires, man, I was blazing some last weekend out of the desert.
Whoa, you're blazing some General Tires?
Yeah, man.
Is it the OG Kush? Is that what they're saying? Is that part of the new prescription?
No.
The General Tires, is that what they
tires
call it?
I just got some more in for the buggy that we're going to implement and put that 450 horsepower in a Baja bug down on the ground here in a couple of weeks. So it's going to be good.
Which is for sale for the right price.
Right? Everything's for sale for the right price.
Absolutely.
Hey, we're sitting here. We're talking with Big John McCarthy. Now, real quick before we go on to a couple other things that I want to hit, you at one point stopped reffing for the UFC for a couple of years, did you not?
Yes, I did. Go ahead and say, why are you that stupid, right?
No, I don't. I have no idea why.
Was that early years? What was the deal with that?
You know what? I was in a position with athletic commissions wanting something, and I kind of had this loyalty towards the UFC, which I absolutely should have had. And the athletic commissions were getting upset with thinking that I was being special, that I would only work for the UFC. And so then I looked at it that I was in a no-win situation. I was going to piss off the athletic commissions, or I'd end up pissing off the UFC. And so I ended up, you know, deciding, you know what, I need to get away from this and get out of that for a while to see if, you know, things can cool off. And that's what I did. I probably made a mistake.
Did you leave the sport or just the sanctioning body UFC?
I left refereeing. And I ended up trying to stay with the sport by kind of doing the, going up and doing TV and broadcasting with a company that was in Canada. And the person that I started that with was a guy named Mike Garrow, and he was fantastic. And he kind of got screwed out of the company that he started. And so I quickly left because I didn't like what was happening or the people that were doing things with it. So I am back kind of doing things with Mike Garrow even now. You know, he's got his thing, and he's still a friend of mine because he didn't do anything wrong. And I went right back to doing what I knew I wanted to do. The day that I left refereeing, I absolutely knew in my heart, I said, I'm making a huge mistake.
Yeah.
Because I'm leaving what I love to do. And a lot of people think it's, oh, you know, it's because of the UFC and stuff. I love the UFC. That's not, you know, it's fantastic. I love any.
Good relationship with Dana?
I have no problem with Dana. Dana might have a little problem with me and stuff because I left and he got, you know, pissed. But I think Dana.
Now, is it his choice to let you back?
Yes and no. How's that?
Okay.
That's the truth. Yes, he can always do that. When an athletic commission puts me into a fight. They're the ones that assign me. Dana can try to come up with something for a reason if I've done something wrong that says, hey, you know, I'd rather not have him because of the fact that, you know, he's done this or something. He doesn't have that with me or anything like that.
So he didn't go way out of his way to, like,
oh,
block
for a while.
Out.
He did for a while. But that's okay, and I don't blame him. That's all right. You know, everyone's got to have their thing.
Better now as it goes?
Absolutely.
Cool.
Absolutely.
Do you get paid by an athletic commission, or do you get paid by UFC Incorporated?
Well, the truth is you're getting paid by, obviously the UFC is paying the athletic commission for your use.
Mm-hmm.
So the UFC, if they have a show, we'll say, in California, they're writing a check that the California State Athletic Commission is then handing to you.
So is it a different scale? Do you get more pay on the big show than you do work at a little show?
Not really. The pay that people get, you know, to be an official, to be a referee or something like that, if you look in the state of California, if you do the last UFC I did, which was on Fox, $700. That's what you get for doing the show.
Shut the front door.
Shut the front door. Okay? You can shut the back door. No. But, you know, the most in most athletic commissions, I think Nevada right now is $1,200 for doing a UFC. Most of them are about $1,000.
Wow.
So some of the smaller organizations, you actually get more?
Well, I'll get more. You know, some of the guys will get more for going to a smaller one because that organization asked for that specific official, that specific referee. And if they're asking outside of the purview of the athletic commission, then you can sit there and say, well, you know, for me to go to, you know, if it's the Philippines or something like that, I can ask for the price that I want. They can look at me and go, you're crazy. And I can say, you're probably right. I am. But I can ask for what I want.
I'm claiming these guys should unionize and go like NFL referees and do a holdout. And
I mean,
they'll have to bring in a bunch of scrubs.
You should be able to get more. I mean, travel days and being in other countries for an extended period of time, that wears on you.
There is no way of looking at being a referee as a way to make a living.
Yeah.
You know, it's not a lucrative thing. You're not going to make money. If you're in North America, United States, Canada, you are absolutely, the most you're going to make is about $1,200, and that's for UFC. Some other shows are going to pay that $1,000 or something like that, depending upon the level as far as TV, pay-per-view, all those things change the pay. But, you know, I do shows all the time for free.
Yeah.
I do shows for, you know, $150, $250.
But that's parlayed into other things, endorsements, sponsorships, things like that.
That's actually a perfect segue to talk about your training facility that you've got now. Because obviously not being able to live on, you know, just that $1,000 every, you know, once every couple of weeks, is that great? Tell us about your training facility you got going on
My facility is up in Valencia, California, right near Magic Mountain. It's at this time, it's about 30,000 square foot is the size of the actual facility.
Whoa.
It's got everything that anyone could ever want as far as martial arts, mixed martial arts. Anything that has to do with the mixed martial arts, we teach. And then, obviously, on top of that, mixed martial arts. But we also have a full...
All, you know, different types of mixed martial arts in-house?
We teach, you know, as far as programs, we've got judo programs, kickboxing programs, boxing programs, Muay Thai, Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, all those things, and wrestling that make up what MMA is.
Yeah.
You know, we have a kids' wrestling program. We do a lot of amateur wrestling. We take kids to all the different tournaments around Southern California, Northern California. We have right now probably about 55 or so kids that compete out of our wrestling
program. I've seen some of the clips of these kids are badass at a young age.
I'll tell you what, some of these kids are unbelievable. And the facility itself the best part about it is the people that are teaching there are truly, you know, they love what they do. They're great at what they do. They're inspiring to the kids, and the kids respond, and they're so good. They're so much better than, you know, I look back and it's like, that kid's so much better than I ever was, you know. And that's great. That's what makes it fantastic.
Yeah.
I love going to those tournaments and watching the kids win their first medal or compete and just do well. And, man, that's what makes my day.
Wow, that's awesome.
I got to go back to the referee thing real quick before we go on to the rest of your training. You obviously, you got yourself a great catchphrase, man. I don't have a great catchphrase. I call people idiots, but I'm just as big as
I like
idiot.
Your birthday, HFBD.
HFBD.
That's pretty
happy
cool
that, birthday
that you always put on Facebook. That's cool.
That is good. But I mean,
I stole it.
Let's get it on. That's. I probably just owe you, you know, $10 for
you
saying that, right?
You're not like Buffer. You don't sue people for $10,000 for saying it.
Okay. I don't think so.
Okay, so tell me this. You know, how did you come up with that catchphrase, and really when did it kind of start sticking?
Oh my God! You know, that honestly started. It's a story I've had to say that story. I don't know how many times. The guy who
give us a quick one because we want to talk about a lot.
One of the co-creators of the UFC was a guy named Art Davey, and Art was the actual marketing guy behind it. And when the Horian said he was going to use me as the referee for UFC 2, Art asked me to come up to his suite that was in Denver at the time, and he said, "I want to talk to you." And I said, "So I came up," and he says, "How are you going to start the fights?" I said, "How do you want me to start the fights?" He says, I want you to do some type of hand signal, and I want you to say something. I said, okay, what do you want? And he looked at me and says, I don't know. He says, you got to come up with it. And I at the time, I just looked at him. I said, Art, I said, I got a guy standing on one side of the cage that wants to beat the hell out of a guy standing on this side of the cage. I'm going to ask this guy, are you ready? I'm going to tell him, let's get it on. And he goes, that's what I want. That's perfect. I said, okay.
Yo, write that down, quick.
And honest to God, it had no thought behind it at all.
That's awesome. You know,
and it's just stuck. And if I don't do it, I'll go to fights now and I'll say fight. And people go, hey, why didn't you do it? Let's get it on. I go, because. And they get mad.
So you have to say it now.
It's become like, okay, I'll say it. No problem.
Well, nice. I mean, it has been used in a couple other places. Mills Lane, the boxing.
Mills Lane said it before boxing, and if you look at the truth.
Maybe you'll become a judge now.
We know that's not going to happen. Yeah.
But at the same time, I think you've really put that passion into it, and that's fantastic. I was just looking online here, too, at the training facility. Great website, by the way. Some great photos.
Very
of you.
Cool.
Looking mean and green, ready to attack. That's his birthday parties. Birthday parties at the gym.
God, they even got that on there.
Come on in and have your kid's birthday party. Oh, yeah. But, I see clients.
Happy birthday, clock.
There's nothing like getting your kid,
Let's jump in the birthday ball.
And then get them suplexed.
I see training heavy equipment tires to flip. I see huge amounts of mats. I see climbing walls and all sorts of – that's really the full Monty there. That's pretty much like you said, every possible thing that could relate to mixed martial arts is there. And the kids could come down and more anything. As a parent, it'd be great to just let them burn themselves out. When you feed them a bunch of candy and cake and stuff, and then they run around at your house afterwards, that's too much. Let them burn it all out on the mats.
Now, I got just a quick thing here, and I want to get into your new app that you're launching here, which I think is just absolutely amazing. You're also a sanctioned boxing referee.
Yes, and here in the state of California, yeah.
Okay. And do you do that a lot?
I don't do it a lot. When you get assigned by the state of California for it be MMA or boxing,
you're kind of in that.
Well, no, they're gonna sit there and they're gonna pick the event and if it's a date you're available on something like that. I have probably only done about 5 boxing shows here in California in the last year or so, and probably in 2 years. But I get selected much more for MMA, and that's absolutely fine.
That's what you love.
That's what I love.
How many total matches would you say you've reffed in your career now?
Oh, my God. You know what?
Any idea?
I love when people come up to me.
Hundreds? Thousands?
Oh, yeah. They said, you've done over 500 matches. Oh, yeah, I think I've done quite a few more than 500. Because if you look like Wikipedia, which knows everything.
Yeah.
They're going to say, 500 UFC matches. Well, I've done over 500 matches in the UFC, yeah. But overall... it's in the thousands. It's way, way up there.
That is amazing.
I'm pretty sure you got to deal with the devil. Once again, you're 50 years old. You look like you're 29 and hanging in there. He's got his head on straight. He can remember early days, early names, especially those very tough Portuguese Brazilian names that are tough to remember on all the fighters. And it's great that you've been able to be a part of the sport, so long, so dedicated to it. I mean, I got to ask you, what do you think about today's MMA? Where it's going, how Dana's got, the UFC sanctioned, or not sanctioned, but set up in it's pretty much a machine now, pumping it
through. Oh, it's a machine.
It's a marketing machine, TV reality series, pumping it back into the sport for promotion, a constant calendar that I'm sure is scheduled 2 years out on fighters, and probably, they probably already got fighters that are 5 years old, scheduled for fights, 15 years from now that are ready to
definitely
go.
Definitely going the right direction.
The sport of MMA has grown so fast and has exploded in such a way. And look, Dana White is absolutely a huge part of the popularity of where MMA is at now. He has done a phenomenal job. He's a fantastic promoter. And, he promotes the hell out of the UFC. The UFC is his passion. And you know what? He works his ass off to make sure that everyone knows what it is, where it's going to be next, and who's going to be fighting. And you got to take your hat off to him as far as what he's done. It has been incredible. I also give that credit to Lorenzo Fertitta And, you know, Frank Fertitta is probably the guy that, you know, he's definitely put the money into it. That man put a lot of money, and, you know, he took a chance. Lorenzo is absolutely a huge part of the concept and the brains behind what goes on in the UFC. He does an incredible job.
What's bad about it? What would you change today? If you were Dana White for a day, what would you change?
Oh my God! If I was Dana for a day, I don't know. I don't think you could just change things and
hair?
And make things better. I've seen Dana with hair. I told him to cut that off, and you know he looks.
Oh, so he's
bald.
Not bald. He isn't bald. He could grow hair
like I can. Yeah, I got a Indian beard, Apache here, Apache there.
You know, it's the main thing I would say is the UFC is so big within the sport of MMA. Again, the UFC, and this is not saying things in a bad way, they're a promotion, though.
Mm-hmm.
They're not the sport, but they are the biggest promotion within the sport. And so people kind of look at them and go, well, that's the sport. That's NFL. Well, there's football everywhere, but everyone looks at the NFL as a sport. A fighter, when they can be, you know, they want to make it, to the UFC.
Yeah.
But there's a lot of other promotions that are out there, a lot of other fighters that are young coming up. And the most important thing is trying to take care of those fighters, because the UFC does everything right. The fighters are taken care of.
But it's a monopoly at the same time, and there needs to be avenues for other guys to come up and make their way to it. I don't mean to cut you off, but
we have to get to the app here. We've got two minutes
please.
Left. The new app, Big John's MMA Fight Club app. Tell us quickly exactly what it is. You can interact, bet your friends, be involved in the live.
Yeah. What? Really?
The whole part of the app is to get people that love MMA involved more with MMA. And to have the ability to, you know, have a friend that sits there and says, you know, I think Anderson Silva is going to beat John Jones. And his friend is going, you're crazy. John Jones is going to beat Anderson Silva. Well, here is an app that you can have some interaction as far as betting on fighters. Going ahead and having someone, we're going to have a guest host every month. The first guest host is Boss Rutten. The second one's going to be Randy Couture. We're going to have guys like Daniel Cormier and Luke Rockhold from Strikeforce, and all of Kenny Florian and people from the UFC are going to be guest hosts that are going to give you their insight on who they think is going to win the fight and why. And then you're going to be able to bet against your friend and have the chance to win these prizes that are out there, and to just to have the ability to say, you know what? I told you, here what we both
sucker.
Got 50,000 on this one. Look at where my points are at, and look at where your points are at. I'm the winner. You don't know anything. It's all about your knowledge of who's going to win in MMA.
So, folks, you can find out more at MMAFightClubApp.com for a chance to win awesome Big John MMA Fight Club gear and the grand prize of a trip to the fights and meet Big John. Text the word Fight Club to the number 20300. That's Fight Club to 20300. You'll automatically be entered to win, and send a direct link to the app as soon as it's live. So go to the website.
Thank you so much.
Thank you so much for coming in.
You guys,
I think it's awesome. You're doing a heck of a job. Great guy. Congratulations on all your success. Folks, we will not be here live next week, but we'll be back in 2 weeks with an extra hour to go along with it starting at 5 o'clock. That's right. Doubling the time here on Edge. We will see you then.
KCAA's Inland.